Created with a gentle hand by Forest City sweetheart Elena Ricklick, Soft Flirt is an apparel and home decor lifestyle brand that celebrates a tender approach to decorating yourself and your spaces.
You're listening to the Nitty Gritty Podcast with Jen Gall and Shona Hutchings, where they discuss the nitty gritty of creative entrepreneurship. This week, on episode number 15 of the Nitty Gritty Podcast, we're interviewing a local creative and business owner, Elena of Soft Flirt.
So, I'm so excited to talk with
you. Yeah. So it's kind of an amazing story. The three of us, so Shona, myself, and Elena, have known each other since, oh my gosh, how long has that been? So we were in our undergrad at Western. Mm-hmm. Wait, because I think you two met first.
Yeah, we met in second year when we were in photography together, in digital photography, I believe. Yeah, but we were actually there the whole time together, but she did a lot more printmaking, which now we'll find out with her business. She did a lot more printmaking and I was more in like photography and painting. And then Jen, you did like sculpture and then went over to the like curatorial side. So we all kind of like, we're doing our own things in university and we're all there at the same time. But yeah, officially I met Elena in second year of university.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I just kind of like, you know, snuck in there.
You just slid on in. Yeah. Friends by default. Yeah.
I slid into the DM.
Yeah.
I feel like, Elena, I feel like you and I have like become closer after university, actually. Yeah.
I think even that's true with me and Shona too. Like we were always close, but then we like kind of fell out of touch a little bit and then really came back into it once we realized all of us had these little, you know, small business dreams.
Mm-hmm.
Where we could support each other.
And honestly, I didn't like mean to do that. It's like, yeah. As a first year teacher, I just like, I didn't talk to anyone.
It's just like, you get busy and then, yeah. I mean, I can think of a whole list of people that I would still consider friends but that I just like, you know, haven't kept up with and haven't been able to keep in touch with. But it's been nice to kind of reinvigorate our friendship based off of a mutual understanding of all the entrepreneurship.
Heck yeah. And fun fact, everyone, both Jen and Elena were in my wedding party. So
yeah,
if you want to go,
yeah, we were.
Creep my images on the internet. You'll be able to see both of them. Okay, so we're going to basically interview Elena today because she owns a product-based business, which is something that both Jen and I don't have. So we wanted to interview her on kind of her journey into product-based business and what she kind of likes about it and maybe some of the challenges. So first of all, can you tell us about yourself? So who you are, what you do, and how you started your business, and maybe also how do you define your brand?
Sure. So my name is Elena Ricklick, and I have always been an artist in some capacity, but never really knew like what that meant for my future or myself. When we finished art school, I was kind of like, okay, cool. Now what? I guess I'll work in a coffee shop forever.
As does everybody.
Art school. Because it kind of just seemed like this like hopeless future and seemed very unattainable to make a living as an artist. So
yeah, but now you know like everything about coffee.
Yes, this is true. So I did that for a bit. I worked in a couple different coffee shops. I worked in a print shop for a long time, doing like more graphic design, digital print work, which has definitely helped me like figure out a lot of different things. But it wasn't until I was working in a coffee shop and then trying to do some art stuff on the side where I started doing little pop-up markets and flea market type things and craft sales and like very much the vibe of there's a table. You set up your artwork and then you just try to make a sale.
Yeah,
just one, any sale. And that started to become something that was really fun. And I realized that people were really liking what I was making and that I started to make some like similar products and started to get some consistency. And that's kind of how it grew out of just an, I would say an art hobby at the time, because I really didn't think that it was going to be something that was going to become something dependable. So it started part-time and I was still working at the coffee shop for quite a while. And then it just sort of took over my life and became everything, which is fantastic because I'm now doing what I love and I get to be creative every day in like 1,000 different ways, which is super fun. But yeah, and as far as what the brand has come to be, I definitely refer to it as like a lifestyle brand. So I have a very specific vibe that I'm putting out and kind of a consistent rapport with customers and a consistent theme to my products that people can count on and sort of know and hopefully love.
We all love it. Not hopefully, we all love it.
Yes, and it's definitely become something where, you know, the amount of regulars I now have is like so shocking to me, and it's so amazing that people consistently, you know, buy the stuff that I put out, and it's super fun. So yeah, I definitely call it like a lifestyle brand, and I'm hopeful that it will kind of take over definitely London, Ontario, but hopefully become like a well-known brand in Canada as well.
Yeah, your stuff's like, I've seen it in Stratford, Hamilton. Yeah, like you're getting out there.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, and I just saw a new store in Hamilton that will be bringing my products to their shop in about a month's time, which I'll keep
exciting. Here. Congrats. Nice. Like, here you go, girl. So speaking of just like how much has happened for you in 2019, I would love to know more, because I feel like considering all three of us with like Shona teaching and doing photography, and then both of us like trying to figure out this whole entrepreneurial business thing, there's like, I feel like even this podcast is a great opportunity just to be like, hey, what's been going on? What's happening? So I would even love to know personally and totally selfishly, like what's been going on in your 2019, and like, what are some of your highlights? And maybe I'll ask the second piece is the second question, but what's kind of been going on for you for, I guess, the first, was it 5 months? 5 months? Jesus.
It doesn't feel like it's been 5 months. Like 2019 has felt like a very fast and dramatic month so far, and it's been 5 months, but there's just been a lot that's happened. So
we say that, but our winter felt like 900 years
long. Yeah, January felt like forever, but it also feels like it was yesterday. So I don't really know where that fits. Yeah, so 2019, I was off to a very rocky start, but definitely have had some much higher highs since then. I think like the big thing for me was actually just this past weekend was my official 1 year anniversary at the Western Bear Market.
Yahoo!
Which was crazy, because I still have people, you know, they come into my booth and they're like, oh, how long have you been here? And I say like, oh, since May. And now I have to be like, it's been a year, which is awesome. So that was a fantastic change for my business that happened last year, but that's really like come into its groove this year. I feel like a lot of people really know me now through that community, and how that's been able to accept me and develop around my brand is just really amazing, and like more than anything I ever expected that would come out of that. And it's still only year one, so pretty spectacular just to be a part of that space and to have that as like my home base. And I always really get excited around new product launches, but the one that I just launched, which was my Hard Pass t-shirt.
Oh yeah, girl.
Which honestly, okay, I love Forest City Sweetheart.
Yeah,
but Hard Pass and me just go together.
It like blew up the internet.
It blew up my internet, and it was wild.
This just it. Soft flirt breaks the internet.
2019. I really wasn't expecting it, and I always get in these little lulls where, and maybe we can talk about this a little bit more in depth later, but I make a new product and I think it's cool. My friends think it's cool, but there's still this little part of me that's like, ooh, I don't know if people are going to like this one. And for some reason that was me with the Hard Pass t-shirt. So when I posted it and it was like within an hour, I had like 200 likes, and it just like kept steadily growing. And you know, I know we're not supposed to be all about likes anymore, but you know, it got well over 600, and that's just wild to me. It was something very unexpected to really like hit a groove with people, and I sold out of them. I had literally two left at the booth, and people were just scooping them up as fast as they could, which felt really great. So that was definitely a highlight. It's always nice to have a product that like perks you back up again and like reminds you of what you're doing and why you're doing it, because especially with, you know, having a product-based business, it's very reliant on making things that people enjoy. So every once in a while, I like feel like I really, you know, strike a, what's the word I'm looking for here? I don't know, but it strikes a chord with people. Yeah. And that happened with the Four City Sweetheart shirt, and that's happening again now with this Hard Pass shirt, which is hilarious too, just the fact that it's a Hard Pass sentiment that people are really clinging onto. And
I think it's because a lot of people relate to it because it's like something we all
say.
Yeah.
But you by your
well, not everyone. Some people say it. Yeah. I would say I'm one of those people that probably would, but a lot of people, want to say it and don't. So to put it on a t-shirt is like, it's very, here's what I'm thinking.
It's very tongue in cheek. And I feel like that can kind of help people sometimes with like, you know, if you can't always speak your mind, then sometimes you can wear it and that's okay too. So that was definitely a pretty big highlight. And that happened kind of on the tail of doing this year's first punk rock flea market, which is, it always feels like home to me. It's one of the first markets I did that really like helped me to get my groove going as a new business. And they're always so good to me and it's always so fun. It feels like a reunion with your friends. You see vendors that come from out of town, they're always there. And so that's definitely a highlight too. It just always feels really special to come home.
So for those of you who don't know, Soffler is at the market at the Western Fair District. And with that being said, like, have you found now that you're at the market, it's like such a huge difference? Like, are you seeing new people? Is it people that you maybe haven't, or sorry, people that you have seen, like, names come through? Like, how has being at the market changed your business?
It's been a massive change and in so many different ways, but I guess the biggest thing and the most obvious thing is that now I have a location, a home base that people consistently know where I'll be. So it's helped me to establish those regulars. Like, there's people come by every weekend and maybe they're friends or maybe they're just customers or maybe they're customers turned friends. Like, this is kind of the community that grows out of doing what you love and what you're passionate about and showing people what that looks like for you. People tend to pick up on that and they want to stick around, which is awesome. So yeah, being at the market, it's grown my community exponentially in terms of the people who see me, but also the people that I get to see as well. So in terms of, you know, connecting with other vendors and other makers. It's just been the boost that I needed that I didn't know how to achieve before I thought of the market as an opportunity. So it's been really great.
I love coming by. Yeah.
We love you there too.
Yeah.
The pink floor, you guys, is so cute.
Thank you.
First pink floor in London.
Yeah. The OG pink floor.
The OG.
Yeah, it's also, I should say, nice to just have a home. Like, it's so much nicer to have just a space that my stuff can live in and I don't have to lug it around from pop-up to pop-up and it can just be there. And which means that my week is about being productive and then my weekends are about, you know, bringing that product into the market to show to people. So super fun.
So talking about what your weeks are like, can you let us know what your typical work week looks like?
Well, I have to say it's probably the highlight of being self-employed is the fact that I get to just do what I want whenever I want for however long I want. And I am very productive. I thrive on being busy. So I try to keep a lot of things on my docket. But usually I will sleep in and then wake up and do some errands and, you know, get some things going, get the work prep out of the way. So anything I need to like have on hand to have very productive time, I do that first. And then usually I like to work at night, so I will work into the wee hours, often until 3 or 4 in the morning, just making things in my apartment and just sewing away.
I think that's like a common trend with people who are creative, is a lot of us are night owls.
Yeah, I'm absolutely a night owl, and it's nice to be able to just do that. Like, I definitely can have some more consistent sleep hours in my schedule, but you know what? It's fine. I'll work with it until.
Jen and I actually like talked about that a little while ago because I think, I don't know if it's just like ingrained in us in general, like creative thinkers like to be up at nighttime. But I also think that our like university background in visual arts, just the way that you have to go about creating your works and your classes run to certain amount of times and then you have a deadline to get to a critique. I think honestly it's just our background in education and visual arts kind of ingrained.
I feel like we learned to thrive on a small amount of stress and now we don't know how to function without that stress, so we just kind of figure out ways to get things done on short timelines and at all hours of the day. But it's also nice because there are less distractions. So it lends for some very productive hours when you are the only person awake. So when I'm working on things at like 2 in the morning.
Oh, I actually missed that. So I was definitely a night owl in university and then probably like a couple years after that. And then I have so many clients that email me first thing in the morning, and it's usually like really actionable stuff. Well, I like refuse to have meetings before ideally 11, but sometimes it's like 10 and on. But yeah, some clients, like, I have to get to things. I usually don't, like, I won't look at my emails before 10 because I usually like to like ease into life at like 9.
And I'm the one sending emails at 4 in the morning, right before I go to bed.
I boomerang those.
I usually wake up to, like, I've got a couple early risers, and I will be going to bed as they're waking up, and we have, like, a quick little conversation.
Oh, my God, that's amazing.
I go to bed, and they start their day.
I'm definitely, like, not an early riser. I prefer to work at nighttime, but I also only have a side hustle and still a full-time job, so kind of have to show up for the kids.
I have to show up on Saturdays and Sundays, and the rest of the week, I can just, you know, do my thing.
So, speaking of creating, when you think of a new product or an idea, what does that process look like for you from, like, start to finish?
Okay, well, start to finish. Usually it starts off with a scramble to just scrawl a quick note somewhere, whether that's on my chalkboard at home or just a scrap piece of paper or in my, you know, in my book at the market, just to remind myself that I have this idea because I'm very forgetful. And then after I kind of like sit with this pile of little notes sitting around my apartment, there's always some that I come back to. So then once I kind of have an idea that I really like that I want to develop, I usually, because my work is all text-based and because that text is my handwriting, it sometimes looks like a serial killer scrawl in a notebook of just the same phrase or the same word over and over and over again until there's one that's a really nice visual that I like. And then I develop that either with my tablet or just fine-tuning it just in real life. But a lot of the ideas stem from, like, quick little two-second conversations with friends where, like, a joke happens or, like, it's a response to something or it's overheard by someone else out of context. And it's just kind of small snippets of, like, just human interaction, basically, is how they start. Sometimes they're an emotional response to situations that may have happened, hard pass, but usually they just develop based out of quick moments, and then they go through a long vetting process, which is just me telling my friends my new ideas, and if they laugh, if they like them, if they think it's cool, that's my, like, quality control. Sometimes I have ideas and they don't land and I have to table them because it's maybe just an Elena only idea and it's not a general public idea. But yeah, so it's pretty fun to just kind of be able to make products based off of a whim or based off of a quick idea that you have. And usually I just start with a small launch and test the market and see if people like it. And if they like the product, then I'll bring it on as like a full-time thing or start making more of it. Which is a really easy way to start things. If anyone is struggling with a product-based business, I always just say, like, just make one and see if anyone wants it. And then if they do, go from there.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
So, yeah, and because I do all of my own work, I do all my own silk screening and I do all my own sewing, it's really easy for me to do those quick little small one-offs. It's harder for people to do that if they're outsourcing any of their production. But because I currently produce all of my work myself, I can just make something on a whim and see if it lands.
Do you, I've seen this before on your Instagram as well, but how often do you poll your audience on social media to kind of get their feedback on whatever it is you're working on?
Not super frequently, but my audience is really responsive, which is fantastic. I feel really, like, blessed to have that. So I usually do, like, one, maybe two full surveys a year, and I like to ask people, you know, because I'm making products for other people to buy, I want to make sure that I'm making things that people want and that I'm not missing out on things that people wish that I could make for them that I don't already make. So I like to just ask people point blank, like, what do I make that you love? What do I make that you don't love? What do you think I could do more of? Where do you wish you could see me? Things like that, which are super helpful to know what people desire of your business. And then also Instagram's story platform has so many amazing built-in little tools for entrepreneurs. So I can do a quick poll, or I can do a question or like a survey type option within that on little small things. So when the, actually a good example of this is the Four City Sweetheart shirt. When that idea was percolating in my mind, I didn't know if it should be a Four City Forever or a Four City Sweetheart. So I put a poll up about that, and it was a resounding Four City Sweetheart, which shocked me because I always think that people are going to gear towards the, not the
alliteration.
Yeah, alliteration, and also sweetheart, even though it's not, feels like a gendered saying. So I always think that people are maybe going to gear towards something that's not so gendered and not so darling, but people really loved it. And it's been just a helpful tool to ask people, you know, what they do like and what they don't like, and get quick feedback. And my Instagram following, they're very engaged with what I'm doing, which is fantastic. And I talk to a lot of my, I don't even want to say followers because half of them are just friends at this point. but I talk to people a lot just through that platform. And it's been really, just really helpful for products, and also like even just thinking of different ideas. Like some of them start based off of silly conversations on like Instagram DMs. So
Yeah. And engaging with your audience and making sure. Like, you gotta know what they want in order to create things.
Because you can't just make things that you want. And you can't just make things that your friends want. You have to make sure that you're making things that the general public also wants.
So, my next question for you is, because this is always a struggle sometimes in like service-based business, but we're not really sure what it looks like for product-based business. So how do you price your items?
So I always start by, it depends on the category of item. So because I make things that are design-based, that I then get produced elsewhere, there's a lot of like back-end design work that goes into that. And then maybe a lot of upfront production cost versus if something is something that I'm sewing, that's like a one-off item. So I just go based off of my hourly input and then the material cost of that. And then also very different from my silk screening process, because there's a smaller material cost, but there's more of a time cost in design as well on the back end. So usually for things that I'm sewing and things that I'm silk screening, there's kind of like an hourly goal that I'd like to be making. So I try to time out like projects every once in a while so that I can like make sure that I'm still pricing things at like a good rate for myself to feel comfortable asking for. But I think even more than that, a large part of it is guesswork. And you kind of, I kind of price things and then sit with it for a bit, see if it works for me. And because I'm making things on like a smaller scale when I launch them, I can have a little bit of room to tweak things before it's a set price. So I do that, and I have definitely changed some prices as time goes on. I'm currently kind of in that with my felt flower bouquets that I've been making, because I had no idea what to price those, because they're really time consuming. But sometimes when you make something time consuming, you just want it to get into people's hands, and you don't really know, you know, what that cost should be. So I am refining prices on that, you know, consistently as I'm making them, and as I'm becoming better at the craft as well. So yeah, I think in part a lot of guesswork until it feels comfortable. And then in other times it's like just as simple as an hourly rate that I like to pay myself. And I kind of do the math on how many of one item I can make within that hour, and then price it that way. That kind of thing.
Yeah, keeping in mind obviously your cost for production. Okay, so my next question was, you recently decided to stop taking custom orders. So what was the decision-making process behind that like?
That was a tough choice. It It was a tough choice, and it was also probably about 2 months late. I have a backlog of custom work that I'm still finishing. I'm getting like, you know, one done a week at this point, and I think I have two, maybe three left, and then a couple sort of promises to people that they weren't necessarily wholesale or custom orders that came through, but, you know, I said, like, once I get done everything that's on my docket, we can chat about maybe making this. So I'm still not even done all the custom orders, and I closed that in the beginning or the end of February, I think. So it's definitely just a matter of not having time to finish everything. And I feel bad. I just feel bad that I had to make people wait, you know, more than a month for an item that they really wanted. Or with one of my friends who's a fellow business owner, he gave me a very complicated project, and he's been so gracious with the timing that it's taken me to produce this, but even still, like, I haven't quite wrapped my head around how I'm gonna make it, and so he's been waiting a very long time. So yeah, it just kind of became the right choice to limit the custom orders, and then after I limited them, I decided that, you know what, my passion is not quite in making custom items. My passion is in making fun products for everyone to have. So I just decided that it was time for me to stop doing custom work. And also it frees up time for me to just be creative and think of new things. And I've, since closing my custom orders, I've had just an influx of new ideas, and I have so much creative freedom now that I felt like kind of burdened before on these items that I was making for people, which are fantastic ideas, but they're not quite, you know, what I want to be making as software.
Oh, they're great ideas. They're not your ideas.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's tricky. And I really like had a hard time because I don't want to disappoint people. I hate disappointing people, but ultimately it was holding my business back a little bit. So I had to make that call.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's totally fair.
Yeah. And you're allowed to say no to things, to say yes to other things.
This is true. Say no to others to say yes to yourself. Is that a thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but technically you're saying yes to your audience too, because now you have more time to offer them awesome software ideas that maybe they weren't able to have access to because you were doing custom things for still amazing people. But
yeah, you know. And maybe I'll do custom orders again in the future, but that'll be when I have a much better grasp on timing and like getting things done, and maybe when I have some staff helping.
I was just
out
gonna say, help with someone.
Yeah, I've been chatting with someone, so we'll see.
Oh, exciting! What would that person be doing? Because I know that you and I have chatted. It obviously is like something that's like a craft like this. Like that would be a hard. It'd be hard to delegate some tasks. So what would that look like?
Yeah, it's gonna be tricky. So I still don't quite know, but there's definitely components of what I make that I could be passing off to somebody who can sew, and components of like the silk screening, I can definitely get some help with production there, because a lot of it is, you know, my creative design, but then there's also just pure production aspects that, you know, once the design is made and once I've exposed my screen, like it's just a matter of silk screening t-shirts or sewing like a specific shape. So I'll still be doing all of my more complicated sewing, and I'll still be doing all of the design work, but I definitely need some help just with, you know, finishing all of the seams and edges and ironing everything and tagging everything and cutting things out and
all of those annoying like just threads that just like stick out.
Yeah. So all of the finishing details can be done by somebody else, and I'm also hopeful that maybe I can bring in somebody who has similar goals or is like also starting a business themselves, so that I can offer, you know, a modicum of mentorship alongside that, so that hopefully they can see how I'm doing what I'm doing, and if it applies to what their goals are, then they can learn from, you know, my process as well.
I love that. All right, so I think I have this conversation, I feel like, so often with people in terms of the difference of wholesale and consignment and which one is best for that business owner or that business. So mm-hmm. in your experience, because I know that you've done both, in your experience, which one do you recommend, or is it dependent on the business itself and the person?
It's definitely dependent on the business and the person. There's pros and cons to both that will change depending on, you know, exactly what you make and how you make it, and also what you can physically do. So the big pro for me with wholesale, which is what I'm shifting to, I do still have a little bit of consignment with a couple stores. But the big shift is, because I'm making things in larger quantities now, I'm operating at a little bit more of a, not a factory mindset, but I have definitely like upped my production to the point where I can produce, you know, 10 Hello banners in the time it would take me to do, say, 3 of one different kind right. of banner. Mm-hmm. So the nice thing about wholesale is you can kind of set in minimums, or you can set in some rules around what you make so that people have to request like a specific thing and their order is like dependent on those barriers, I guess, not barriers, parameters. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that's definitely helpful with wholesale because you're usually pricing your items at a cost that then they can be resold for double, which in theory kind of hurts when you're a maker and it's an art-based business. But when you're able to start making things faster and when you're able to make, you know, 10 of the same thing, if that's what they're asking for, then it just becomes easier to fulfill a wholesale order versus consignment. You have to make that product and just ship it out to them and then hope for the best. There's no guaranteed sale out of it. And then you've also got a lot of inventory just kind of out in the world. So sometimes consignment can be hard if you are consigning with maybe smaller shops that you don't know their traffic, you don't know what they like. So if you have a lot of consignment shops, you have a lot of inventory out there that might all come back to you at one point in time. It might not sell, or it might sell and that's great. But you are depending on this kind of unknown market. So I think those are the main like two differences in terms of like getting them out to stores. I think it's also a little bit harder to fulfill a consignment order because often they want kind of like one of everything, or they want like a bit of whatever you have. Whereas wholesale, they're just going to ask for specific things and they know what they want. They know what their customer wants. So it becomes kind of more of like orders.
Right. And then just to clarify in terms, so wholesale is when the person is actually like paying and buying the items from you, and then they then resell them at their location.
Yeah. So they're buying it outright. And then they're selling it usually at a suggested retail price that you would indicate via, you know, your wholesale price. Usually it's double, or some businesses do more than double, which is, you know, to each their own. Some people wholesale for less than, so usually it's like a 50-50 kind of thing, but on paper it looks like they're buying it for this price and then marking it up double, which a lot of consignment will be like 60-40 or 30-70 split. So sometimes it's not that big of a difference in terms of like the money that you're making. But with wholesale, it's a guarantee versus consignment, it's a maybe. And that's the big change.
So this is always something I was always so curious about wholesale. So let's say, for example, someone has purchased something and they have it in their store and you have a sale going on at your location, they don't have to do the same thing and vice versa, right?
Yeah. So it's completely individualized, and you can, like, I price things differently for wholesale than I do in my store for some items, because it's just not feasible to have them at the same cost. So a lot of the time, like, that's up to them, and then they can carry on like an individual sale for themselves anytime. It's not reflective of like my wishes or like my say of like when or if they ever have a sale, and vice versa. So, it definitely takes on a different life when it's wholesale, because they're going to style it differently. They're going to have a different clientele and a different, like, often size range, or like even just different fulfillment of what they want to carry versus what I'll have in store. So,
right. And then obviously the benefit of that is that you're getting your product out to an audience that maybe you weren't able to reach on your own.
Yeah.
And the downside of that is, like you were saying, right, with consignment, which is where, like, basically you're just kind of like, you have a space in wherever location it is that they are. And that's just like, that would scare the crap out of me.
Yeah. It's like inventory sitting there. Yeah. And also too, like sometimes a store will have inventory and then maybe you've grown as an artist and maybe you've become better and then you get this old product back and you're like, oh, well, what am I going to do with this stuff now? Not to say that about everything, but sometimes that's the case. I'm really shifting away from consignment myself. Like I do prefer wholesale. It's also just nicer for consistency and especially through slower months because usually stores are, you know, refilling and reordering more consistently when it's wholesale versus when it's consignment. But it's not feasible for a lot of people. It definitely works for myself. Silk screening and like items that are made in that process are a lot easier to offer wholesale versus products that are sewn. So I don't offer everything wholesale. And the things that I do are like more limited in terms of the options that I offer, which is also a way to keep like your own kind of flagship or your own brick and mortar like special, because you can have special fabrics or special options. But also another nice thing about wholesale is you can also create a little curated collection for someone. So, which is what I've done with Loft House Living.
Yeah, the cozy stuff.
Yeah, so cool. Yeah, we have a wholesale partnership, but they have specifically ordered items that they've kind of dreamt up themselves. So we have a cozy sweatshirt, a cozy banner, and we did some cozy onesies, and we did some drop sheet mountain pillow collaborations. So all of that was super fun. And it's nice too, because, and now I'm off on a tangent, but I have a couple stores in London that represent my brand. And London's so small, so sometimes I war with like having too many stores in one city having my product. But a nice way around that is if, you know, each store has something a little bit different. So Loft House has the Cozy Collab, or the Cozy Capsule Collection, we'll call it. Grow and Bloom has just my home decor. Filthy Urbina has just my apparel. So these are three stores in London that are fairly close to each other, but they all carry something a little bit different. So that way they're not stepping on each other's toes. I'm not stepping on anybody's toes. We're all happy. We all have Softlert.
We all love Softlert.
And I love the little capsule collections. I would love to do more of those for different stores and have like it catered to what they want, actually, which is what I've done with Spruce Moose, my BFF Joel in the market. What I have with him is like very exclusive because I don't work with fancy fabrics.
Oh yeah, banners. Oh my god, I love
those. So that's been really fun collaborative too, and that's a wholesale partnership too.
So then, yeah. I think you touched on something that's really important, and you like briefly mentioned it, that like they fall within your brand and their audience kind of. It would be an audience that you would like to reach and they like connect with what you're doing. So how do you kind of determine that? Like, I'm sure you could get a ton of requests to do wholesale or to do capsule collections. Like, how do you know when it's the right fit and when to say yes?
Yeah, it's tricky because I've definitely like, there's been a few missteps I've taken where like somebody doesn't quite align with my brand and it's hard to navigate that. But when you, I feel like it's just like when you know, you know. And when somebody reaches out to you and you get excited about what they already have, then usually that's a sign that it's going to be a good fit. If somebody reaches out to you and browse through what they already have and you're kind of like, I don't know, just trust your gut and know that that's probably not going to be the right fit for you. But also understand that sometimes money's tight, and not to say I do this, but it's okay to just get yourself out there in other stores that maybe you wouldn't normally think would be a fit, because they might be, and they might have a market that you weren't prepared for, or like that you didn't consider before. But generally speaking, everyone who's reached out to me, or who I currently, sell with, their market and their demographic are very aligned with my own. So it's kind of been like an easier fit to fall into.
Yeah. That makes sense. Okay. My next question is maybe you've touched on this already a bit, but how do you reach your customers and what do you think is the best social media platform for your business?
My business is like 99% Instagram. It is absolutely the the social media platform for me. I use like Facebook as well, more so with like promoting events and things like that. But I find that I don't get the same level of engagement on Facebook mm-hmm. as I do on Instagram. Same with like Pinterest and Twitter. I've tried them poorly. They're just not for me, but Instagram is like home and it feels comfortable and it makes sense. And I love it, first of all. So it's fun to just use that to connect with people. But I definitely, in terms of like finding new customers and like reaching different people, I've taken a very organic approach to that. I try to do some content here and there that's very like, you know, share this with your friends if you think that they'll like it, that kind of thing. But for the most part, I think that it speaks for itself when I make posts and when I'm launching new products, people will tag their friends and things like that. Partnering up with like-minded businesses on giveaways and things like that have been really beneficial to me in terms of bringing new people to me. But the main thing is to just be active, I think, outside of social media and use it as like something that accents or like accentuates your business, because I found most of my following is London based and is local. So if I do a lot of London events, then I find new people that way. But then just kind of being active and engaging on social media and on Instagram is my way of kind of getting them to stick around. And another thing I've been doing a lot of is just showing people sort of behind the scenes of my process, which has been a really great tool for not only like showing people just how much work goes into the things that they are buying, but also just a way for them to engage with me and be able to like see like a really cool thing. And sometimes mm-hmm. I'm making something and I'm like, this is kind of cool, so maybe I should show people like you know, what goes into making this. And yeah, I guess that's been the main thing. My main like approach, I guess, to
I think showing some behind the scenes gives people like a yeah. further appreciation of what you're creating. So
definitely further appreciation.
No, legit. When I love the stories or the posts that you do where you're just writing. Oh mm-hmm. my
people
god!
Love yeah. Yes, it's like ASMR. Everyone says it's ASMR, and I'm running with it. I'm like, okay, yep, this is what we're doing now. So I'm trying to do more like IGTV posts where it's just. And I think that there is a lot of this content online, but I want to start making videos that are kind of like, you know, like make along with me kind of things, where it's not me talking at you. It's not a DIY. It's not a how-to, but I'm just making something and showing you how that's done.
It's like people do with Work With Me Wednesdays or whatever.
Right? Yeah, or they do like Get Ready With Me, things like that. Yeah. So I'm going to try to figure out a way to phrase that a little better, but make it with me. but yeah, people are obsessed with me cutting out felt or me writing words, and they love the visual, they love the sound, and it kind of makes me like do my work differently. Like sometimes I'll get this really good idea for like a behind the scenes video, and then it makes me really productive because I got to get like the right shot and I need to make this really peaceful, beautiful little behind the scenes video of me in my studio making something. So it's kind of a fun way to go about your like productivity too, is just adding in things that make it interesting for you. So
I think something that you said in regards to like reaching your customers really kind of like hit the nail on the head and like resonated with me when you said that you do a lot in the community, and then mm-hmm. they find you then, and that's now a way for them to follow you and to engage and to basically see what you're up to. And I find that that's not always the case with small business owners. They think that, you know, Instagram or social media can kind of be like a means to an end and like the only way that they can connect with their audience. And I just feel like that's such an unfortunate mindset mm-hmm. because that's so one-sided. And I think we've seen that a lot. Like a lot of stuff that you've done over the last year has been like going to events and like doing pop-ups and all that. So it's just so nice to have that kind of mindset.
Yeah. Well, in my defense, I'll say it's easy to do that when your community embraces you as much as London has embraced me. Like London loves me and it feels amazing. But like I have so much support here, and whether that's from customers or people I'm collaborating with or friends who are in business or outside of business, like I have so much support coming at me. And even, you know, like just with the program I did through Fanshawe and having a pop-up in downtown London, like even the bigger corporations have been really helpful. Mm-hmm. And that it just helps you feel supported and helps you feel like you have like room to grow when people around you are not only excited about what you're doing, but are offering you like the emotional support to back it up. Mm-hmm. So I lean on people a lot. I lean on my friends and family a lot to like help me get through a lot of, you know, the hard things in entrepreneurship and like having a small business. But it's nice to have like people that do care that you succeed. And so, yeah, I love London. I'll always call this home and I'll always want to be here. And it's something that's not a popular thought with people. I find a lot of people leave London and they think it's, you know, it's too small, or they think it's not progressive enough, or there's no room for artists, or there's not a great community to support, you know, all of these different things and all of our different dreams. But I have found that not to be the case with me. And yeah, it makes it easier to engage with people and easier to seek out different partnerships or different pop-ups or different, you know, retail spaces, because it's such a small community and everybody knows everyone. And even lately, because I've been getting like more known, I guess, in our community, I'm having a lot more fun with going somewhere and someone being like, "Oh, you're software." And I'm like, "Yeah, that's me. Like, that's me. You know who I am." Yeah. So yeah, it feels like a small town where everybody knows you and everybody loves you.
Oh my God. Great.
Yeah, there's something to be said about London, like as a community for support for small businesses, because we do have a lot.
Yeah, we do
here. There's a lot of like makers businesses, creative businesses, like product businesses, service based businesses. There's a lot of small businesses in London, but I think that the community that we have here has really embraced it.
The community is stoked. The community wants to support local, and they have so many opportunities to do so.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's hard not to support local in London, and that's really cool.
And we also have like two great post-secondary education, like facilities here that offer grants and programs for people to come out and create like entrepreneurial type businesses.
Like, both Western and Fanshawe have fantastic, entrepreneur support networks. Like if you want to start a business and you're in college or university here in London,
do it.
They'll throw money at you. They'll throw support. Like you can just get so much growth and so much support from the networks that that are there. And too with like downtown London, if you want to start a brick and mortar business in downtown London, like they want people to come downtown and be shop owners. So reach out, communicate. You know, tell me your ideas, and I'm sure they'll be happy to help you try and succeed.
Yes, Elena. My favorite moment was when I was at that. Oh my gosh, it was a small business presentation with an agency here in London. And it was like a branding, basically branding workshop that I was at with my team. And they were doing examples of Etsy shops, and they flipped to the next screen, and it was Softler that popped up on the screen. And it was like a screenshot of it. And I was like, oh my God. And I quickly took a photo and sent it to Elena, and I was like, oh my God, you're famous.
Which was the best. No, you took a photo and posted in your story and tagged me, and you tagged Etsy Canada, and Etsy Canada followed me back, and I was like, oh my God, Etsy knows who I am.
I was like, guys, and like my team, they were like, yeah, that's cool. And I'm like, but you don't understand.
It's really cool, like just to see, I guess, the reach of support that I have in London too, because it blows my mind too. Because I know that I can count on like a certain, like smaller group of people. But then I get all this support from people that I don't even realize are like, you know, like rooting for me. Mm-hmm. And it's really cool. Like London is fantastic.
So I feel like we've kind of already connected on the like the London community and how it has impacted your business. But what would you say is like the best tip that you can give someone who maybe wants to reach out and be more a part of that community? Like, what's your best piece of advice for someone who's looking to do that?
My best piece of advice is to be kind and friendly and nice to everyone that you come across.
And because a Baffler.
you never know who you're going to meet. But I found that, like, honestly, if you just kind of go about this small business world with kindness, usually opportunities will just kind of come up to connect with someone else, or maybe you collab with someone else, or maybe you can work really well with somebody that you didn't expect to. And so, yeah, just like learning who's in your community, meeting people, and just like being really open-minded and kind is the best advice I can give. Because I find some people, they get in their own head, and then they're scared to meet other people, or they're like too shy to approach people. But you can do all of this on Instagram too. You can do it on Facebook. You don't have to do it in real life if you're shy. That's fine. Mm-hmm. But just connecting with people any way you can, and being friendly and having fun. And go to things. Go to events.
That's a good one.
Like, I do a lot of pop-ups, but I also go to a lot of pop-ups. Like, even if I'm not bending at one, I'll swing by Merrymakers, or, you know, I'll go to the Boho Bazaar, even if it's not one that I'm vending at. Because I think it's really important to show, like, your face as a supportive community member if you want to garner that community support.
Also, if you're uncomfortable connecting with someone at an event, take photos of their stuff.
Yeah, take photos and tag.
And then post it and tag. Yeah. It's like the best.
It's the best. Just post it in your story. And then it's like, you know, shout out love. And people will respond to that. And people will be happy that you came out and that you noticed what they were doing. So there's a lot of ways to connect with people that are like really like low, not low impact, but they're high impact, but with like lower effort. And so if it's like scary to you to do all that, you know, you can still be shy and make friends.
Yeah, or I'm like totally like shameless plug. You can come to our Create and Caffeinate events.
Yeah, come hang out. Go to Create and Caffeinate, episode 4 is coming up soon.
Coming up.
At Thacker's with the most amazing coffee.
Oh my God. Her baked goods.
Such a dream.
Oh, love.
She's someone else I've known for like over a decade, and then we reconnected because we're entrepreneurs, and it's, you know, the mutual hustle brings people together. Because her and I went to high school together, so yeah.
Oh my God, are you serious?
Yeah.
She went to, she did her master's with my sister.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's like a weird.
She knows everybody.
Yeah, it's like a weird. So funny. London has a way of doing that. Like,
London is 6 degrees of separation.
It's so weird.
All the time. Everywhere.
Everyone knows someone who knows someone. Mm-hmm. It's awesome.
It's very helpful.
Do you know our population is actually like almost half a, is it half a million?
No.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
The sign still says
380,000.
Yeah.
The sign still says 380, but they recently came out in an article saying it's closer to half a million. It's been growing, but still small town vibes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Elena. Now is the time for you to be able to plug your business. So tell us, you've already kind of touched on some of them, but we want them in a list so that we can go out and buy all things Soft Flirt. So where can listeners find your items?
Okay, here's the list. So locally, in person, in London, Grow and Bloom, they have home decor items. Filthy Urbina has apparel and some small home decor items that are still trickled from before. Loft House Living has our special little cozy collection. The market at the Western Fair District. I am there Saturdays 8 to 3 and Sundays 10 to 2 every single weekend. And if I'm not there because I'm on a trip in the summer, which I will be doing, you will find one of my beautiful friends who supports me.
Or soft mom.
Soft mom is often at the market, which is great. But I have absolutely everything that I make at the market at my booth. So you can definitely find what you're looking for there. You can also find my work online from my Etsy shop, which is softflirt.etsy.com. I don't have everything on there because some things are tricky to ship, but if you're out of town and you want to find something, that's your best bet. And then I've also got a shop in Stratford called Got It Made Artisan Market. They have some of my work. A super sweet florist in Varna, Ontario, Sarah Sylvester, carries some Soft Flirt at her little shed flower shop, and that's a super awesome spot. Where else?
Hamilton.
Girl on the Wing has some of my patches.
Yep.
I believe there's some of my stuff at Dwell in Cambridge. and a couple things coming up. So add to the list in about a month.
And if you're a business owner and you have come across Soft Flirt items and you want them in your store, make sure that you contact Elena.
Send me an email.
Yeah.
I am in dire need of an overhaul of my wholesale catalog, but I will send you what I've got and I will send you some amendments to that.
So at least she's on a
close. Yeah. That's like the one thing about owning your own business is like, if you don't tell people honestly what's up,
they'll find out.
They'll find out. And also just be honest instead of not getting back to someone, because you're going to miss opportunities if you're just like waiting on the right moment to be able to send someone something. So yeah.
Yeah. There you go. So we got it. All of those places.
That's
if you guys missed it, rewind. Yeah.
I don't think I'm missing anything.
Or look at our show notes.
Or look at our show notes, because we'll list them in there.
Yeah.
Yes. So our last but not least question for you is, what's your best piece of advice for others out there who are looking to start a product-based business? Best piece of advice.
Okay. Well, I think that what I come back to a lot, because I talk to people about this quite a fair bit, is like, don't wait for all of the pieces to be perfectly aligned. Like, just start somewhere. If you don't have a business name yet, or you don't have business cards, or you don't have a full line of products, it doesn't matter, because you can still start, you know, gaining traction and making things, you know, on like a bare bones DIY scale. So my biggest piece of advice is just try it. And if it works, continue trying and continue developing that and just like working on that until you get into a groove and until you find your market, until you find your people. Because I find that a lot of really great ideas just never happen because people are too scared to try, because there's not, you know, all of the pieces aren't in place yet. So that's my number one piece of advice, is to just do it, as Nike says. But just try, and you know, if you fail, that's okay, because you can try again.
Fail and try and fail and try and fail and try. It's like, exactly.
And then succeed. That's how that works. Because, I mean, it's not always your first attempt that is what sticks with people. So sometimes it just takes a while, but if you keep, you know, trekking along. And also, people that make things, just continue making things. You don't have to have an audience or like a buyer to make something you enjoy making. So that's the other thing. Sometimes a hobby can still be a hobby. It doesn't need to turn into a product-based business. But when you find that there is like a market for it, when you find that there's customers for it, then, you know, just start.
Exactly.
You'll figure it out.
All right. Well, that concludes everything that we had on our plate. Any questions we had for you? That was amazing. Yeah.
Thank you for
hanging out with us.
It's fun to talk to friends about
this.
Yeah.
And then we'll make sure we add all this information into our show notes and make sure that we have all the places that you can find Elena's products, because you all need to go buy Soffler and rep her stuff.
I think for a city sweetheart, she'll just become like a London uniform. Like,
yeah,
everyone should have.
I think so. And I'll have hard pass shirts restocked by the end of May. So if you've been waiting for
one, I'm gonna buy one.
I need
one of those in my life.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I'm gonna conclude this. And just thank you for being an awesome, amazing human being that you are, and for creating amazing products.
Well, thank you.
Enjoy. Okay, well, that's it for episode 15. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and we will see you next week for a really nitty-gritty topic that I think everyone's going to want to listen to.
I'm excited.
Mm-hmm. Okay, have a great one.
Hey, bye, guys.
That's all for this week's podcast, Jen Gall and Shona Hutchings. Tune in next week for more nitty-gritty.